From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette, and you're listening to Idaho Matters. For many ranchers, their connection and control of their livestock ends when the animals are shipped off to the ranch to either be grain finished and fattened up in a feedlot, or they're sent to slaughter and processing at a large corporate-owned facility. But that's starting to change as women carve out their place in the meat supply chain. Ashley Ahern has been visiting working ranches all across the West in her podcast, Women's Work. And today, she talks with one rancher who's leading that charge. Let's take a listen.
When I walk in her front door, Corey Carmen is rushing around, grabbing clothes, grinding coffee, and packing food into a cooler.
Snack sticks, summer sausage, like all these products that we make are coming in handy.
It's July, and there's a wildfire burning near where her cows are grazing, 40 miles north of here. And today, things got worse.
This afternoon, out of nowhere, there's a new fire. And it's to the west, moving east really quickly.
The two fires are basically surrounding Corey's herd, and there's only one dirt road to get in and rescue them. She got the news from the lead firefighter coordinating the response, and he sounded stressed.
I mean, I said, I don't know what my plan is. And he said, we'll start with the closest ones first.
Corey owns and runs Carmen Beef in the Wallowa Valley of northeastern Oregon. She told me it's been so dry here this summer, with very little snowpack and record-breaking high temperatures. She says her land is strange to her.
Yeah, this is not even, I don't even know our ranch. Like, I don't recognize our land. I don't recognize the color. I mean, you know, people are like, oh, it's as dry as August, but it's different. It's a different, yeah, it's totally different. It's really, something's not right.
I follow Corey outside as she and her ranch manager, Sam Humphreys, load saddles and horses into the trailer and get ready to go. They talk quietly, organizing, deciding which horses to bring. They'll be riding through some rough country, gathering up cows and loading them onto trucks to send them home.
And if it's okay, I'll hang around. Maybe I'll hear from you tomorrow, but...
She asks me to feed her dog for her and then heads out.
Godspeed. Thanks.
This is ranching and climate change, responding to wildfires, record-breaking high temperatures, droughts. I saw it playing out in one way or another on all the ranches I visited for this series. And experiencing it herself has just made Corey Carmen double down on her mission to change the way we raise and sell beef. She's taken a close look at our industrial meat system in this country. She says it's broken, and it's time for all of us to imagine a more sustainable way forward. I'm Ashley Ahern, and this is Women's Work, stories about the changing face of ranching in the West. I went back in mid-August to finish interviewing Corey. She'd gotten her cows to safety, thankfully, and when I got to Carmen Ranch, it was like the whole landscape had breathed a sigh of relief. There'd been a big rain the night before, the first one all season. We went out to her greenhouse to pick basil. Corey has pale skin, dark hair pulled back in a loose ponytail. The plants were huge, and some had started to flower. Bees droned calmly around us in the heat, and Corey knelt quietly, plucking and pruning as we talked.
Well, last time I was here, you were operating at a very different speed.
It was. Your timing's exceptional.
It is a nice full circle, right, to show up when, you know, the fires are kind of popping out of nowhere, and then to circle back right after it rained for the first time in a long time. It was pretty great.
The ranch is peaceful in the golden afternoon light. A peacock struts through the yard. Horses munch hay in a field nearby. Corey's uncle Kent drives by on his four-wheeler.
Where does he go?
Just toots around?
Really hard to tell.
He collects eggs, locks its chickens.
This cattle ranch has been in Corey's family for three generations. First, her grandfather and grandmother ran it. Then her father and uncle took over and raised heritage bulls and breeding stock. Corey and her sister were raised here, and Corey always knew she wanted to ranch when she grew up. But then, When Corey was 14, her father died in an accident on the ranch.
And he was a huge, huge, I mean, huge influence in my life. And he and I were super close and a lot alike. So it's like all things, right? That it starts out really, really hard.
After her father passed away, Corey's uncle Kent kept the ranch running with Corey's grandmother, Ruth. She and Corey were really close. Corey got through high school. She excelled, in fact, got all kinds of scholarships, and went away to Stanford University. She studied public policy. That's where she started to see the flaws in our agricultural system. Corey's father and uncle's generation built the industrial food system we have today. It centers around mass production and efficiency. It involves growing crops like grain using pesticides, fertilizers, and herbicides, then shipping some of those crops all over the country to feed cows that are kept in concentrated feeding operations. Then those cows are processed in large, centralized slaughterhouses. In fact, just four big meatpacking companies control more than 80% of the beef market in the U.S. But none of that was real for Corey until college, when she was driving on the I-5 freeway in California and she saw her first feedlot. Thousands of animals crammed in together, standing in their own manure.
I had no idea. And it's, you know, you can smell it before you see it. I mean, it was just one of those experiences I'll never forget.
Feedlots are where more than 90% of the country's beef cattle go to eat grain and get fat before they're slaughtered. It was eye-opening for Corey. As a kid, she didn't know where her family's cows went when they left the ranch. She just knew they had a good life while they were there.
And then it just clicked. I'm like, oh, this is what everybody, they don't see what I know as ranching. This is what they see, and this is their experience of livestock production, is this massive feedlot along the I-5 freeway.
Corey knew she wanted to go back to her family ranch eventually, but she didn't want to be a part of that system she saw on the side of I-5. First, though, she had big career goals she wanted to pursue. She dreamed of going into international policy and development and traveling the world. After she graduated, she worked in D.C. for a while. But then, one summer, in her early 20s, she came home to the ranch to visit her uncle and her grandmother.
And, you know, they were making it work, but it was really hard. And it just felt like such an irresponsible thing to do, to know that I wanted to come back to the ranch and then look at, you know, how hard those guys were working and say, all right, just keep it together. I'll be back in 20 years.
Maybe it was time to come home and help out.
And I really started thinking about that, and then promptly had a panic attack. It's the only one I've ever had.
Really?
Yeah. And then decided to stay.
At 23, Corey Carmen came home. But she came home committed to doing things differently. If she was raising cows, they were never going to spend a minute of their lives in a feedlot. They weren't going to be fed grain or hay, raised with herbicides or pesticides. They weren't going to be given antibiotics or hormones. Just grass and freedom their whole lives.
And I think my uncle was so tired and burnt out that when I showed up, he was just like, yeah, take it. He's like, you're going to do what? You're going to raise grass-fed beef? But then he was also like, well, there's nobody else standing in line, so at least it's not going to be on, you know, my watch.
I can see why that must have been hard for Kent. During his lifetime, the agricultural system transitioned from small, family-run farms and ranches, like the one Corey's grandmother grew up on, to bigger corporate operations. More output meant feeding more people and making more profit. That was what his generation worked for.
He definitely, in the early days, was like, I'm not associating myself with you.
In the community.
With our practices, because what we were doing is so weird.
Well, like what?
Just the way we were rotating our cattle, and, you know, we learned holistic management early on and tried to keep everything together and move more frequently and left a lot of grass behind to cover the soil. And he was just like, yeah, you're clearly nuts.
In a way, Corey's built her ranching business around getting back to an older way of raising beef. But it's been a long, hard road, and she started small. Most ranchers raise calves for less than a year on the ranch. Then they're sold into the system. They leave the property, and the rancher has no control over how they spend the rest of their lives, or where their meat ends up being sold, and for how much. Corey wanted to change that right from the get-go. So she starts raising cows that spend their whole lives on her ranch, eating only grass. Then she'd take them to a small local slaughterhouse and sell the meat in shares to people in her community. So they'd buy a quarter of a cow or a half of a cow and store it in their chest freezers to eat throughout the year, instead of going to the grocery store and buying cuts of meat like most of us do. Soon, Corey meets her husband, and they're ranching together in the middle of nowhere. No cell reception, no internet, and they have their first child. And in those early years, they were barely scraping by. At one point, two of Corey's closest college girlfriends come for a visit.
And one was a physician in New York, and one was an attorney in San Francisco. And we had, they were my two best friends, right? Like, we had done everything together. And I wanted to take them out to lunch. And I didn't have enough money to buy them lunch. And I was so just embarrassed, you know, like, what am I doing? I have this great degree and there's all these things that I could do and I'm doing this and I don't know if I'm getting anywhere. And we are totally, totally broke. Like, literally, it wasn't like, oh, I just don't want to pull it out of my savings account. It was like, there was no money.
Did your girlfriends take you out, I hope?
Yeah, they did. And I didn't tell them.
Oh.
I mean, I was too embarrassed, right?
Corey and her husband keep building their business. They start selling their meat in individual cuts for higher prices at local farmers markets. And then they set their sights on breaking into the urban restaurant world.
And we would, walk in just terrified, right, to these, like, high-end Portland chefs and fancy restaurants that we could never afford to eat in, and they seemed so intimidating. And, you know, we'd hand them our little, like, paper-wrapped steak, and they're like, we don't really like grass-fed, but I'll give it a try. And, little by little, we made some restaurant customers.
But it was a constant hustle, raising the beef, figuring out the supply chain, the shipping, processing, marketing, all of it, on top of raising three kids. And the numbers were still tight.
And then, you know, we'd all have a family dinner together and put the kids to bed and I would go back to the office and just, that's what I did for so long. So there was just a lot of kind of dark, lonely nights looking at my budget thinking, I know I'm smart. I have all these tools, I have this great education, and I can't figure out how to make it add up. And what are we going to do? Am I going to be the generation that blows it? That was what I would think over and over again. Have I been too arrogant about this? Like, did I make the wrong decision? Like, should we get bigger? And just, like, not knowing which direction to go.
Corey did end up choosing to get bigger. In order to do that, she knew she couldn't go it alone. She needed to build a bigger supply chain to meet the demand she was creating at restaurants and other places. She needed more beef producers to keep her pipeline full. But to build that pipeline and that infrastructure, she also needed cash. So she worked her network and got the opportunity to pitch her idea to an investment firm that was interested in food systems.
And so I put together a financial model and a pitch deck. I'd never done anything like that before. And basically said, here's the deal. You guys believe in developing a grass-fed beef industry in this country. I think I can build a regional model. And this is what it's going to look like. And we're going to do it right. We're going to have the right practices on the ground. We're going to work with committed processors. We're going to have great customers. It's going to take me a couple years, And if we build this foundation, have a really great supply chain, then we will uncover the things that we can add value to.
Her pitch was successful, and the money made it possible for Corey to build a supply chain beyond just her ranch. Now, Carmen Beef buys cows from 7 different ranches in the Northwest. And these ranchers have all agreed to a few key guidelines. Every cow is raised only on grass, never confined to a feedlot or fed grain. The cows are not given hormones or antibiotics. Ranchers agree to minimize the use of herbicides and pesticides and create grazing plans that keep cows moving around to promote soil health. Corey worked a deal with a small, family-owned slaughter and processing facility. And that turned out to be really beneficial during the pandemic, when large industrial slaughterhouses were shut down because of COVID outbreaks. Her processor kept going. Now, Corey has built up demand for Carmen Beef in restaurants from Sacramento to Seattle. It's sold at butcher shops across the region, and the New Seasons grocery store chain now carries it too.
And then the meat company has a mission and a vision and a group of investors and all of us that work really hard to execute on that, get a paycheck every month. I mean, that's pretty cool.
She did it. She built that alternative supply chain. Instead of going to the big 4 meat processors, ranchers can sell their beef through her for more money and be rewarded for doing the right thing on their land and for their animals.
It's a much better situation than what I was doing before.
So in a way, you created the company that buys your beef that mm-hmm. you wish you could have sold to when
yeah.
you started.
Totally. 100%.
Huh.
And now I run it.
But will it scale? That's a question I've been pondering throughout my reporting for this series. And it's a big part of what drew me to Corey Carmen. So many of the women I've met are doing amazing things at the individual and local community level. They're connecting directly with customers, selling their meat in shares or online, boutique style. That said, most of them are operating more at the farmer's market level than the McDonald's level. And at the end of the day, we can still all go to McDonald's and buy beef on the dollar menu. I keep wondering, when do ranchers like the ones I've met break out of the niche market and into that mainstream system?
The question is always, well, we can't feed the world doing it the way you're doing it, right? And that's often the critique, and it's just, and my counter to that, or my answer to that, is we actually can't feed the world the way that we're doing it right now. So something's going to give, and what we could feed the world doing is a really resilient, integrated system. But what we suffer from is a failure to imagine it, because all we can imagine is the system that we know.
When Corey thinks about our future, and her future as a rancher, racked by wildfire, drought, chemical-ridden soil, pandemics that shut down large meat processing facilities, her thoughts turn to her grandmother Ruth and the food system of that older generation. It was local and regional. The meat Ruth ate was raised nearby. It was slaughtered nearby. It ate grass, because growing a crop like grain and then shipping it all over the country to feed livestock was a bad use of money and land. It was so different from the system we have now.
If you were to describe to my grandma when she was, you know, had her first child, which would have been in 1940-something, to describe to her the feedlot system for beef or the industrial food system, she would be like, "You are nuts. That doesn't even make sense." And yet, in 70 years, we created it and we can't imagine anything else. Our limitation is not that we can't feed the world, it's that we can't imagine what it's going to take. But we can totally do it, and we don't have a choice.
You can find all the episodes from the Women's Work podcast on our website, BoiseStatePublicRadio.org.